What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
On the last day of February, 1844, at 11 a.m., a Wednesday, around 400 guests boarded the USS Princeton, docked in the Potomac River in Alexandria, Virginia. The steamship was the pride of United States Navy Captain Robert F. Stockton, a sailor since he joined the military in 1811 at age 16. Among the dignified elite who boarded the ship that day was President John Tyler, former First Lady Dolly Madison, the 15th Secretary of State Abel Parker Upshur, and the United States 15th Secretary of the Navy Thomas Walker Gilmer, who'd only been serving in that position for 9 days. This trip was a public reception and finally got underway at 1 p.m. after being delayed by tardy congressmen. Imagine that. It was to be a relatively uneventful jaunt around the Potomac to demonstrate the Navy's latest and greatest ship. But the USS Princeton's captain, Robert Stockton, was a bit of a showman, I guess you could say, and a dramatic demonstration of what he was most proud of on the ship more suited his character as a man who craved the action of battle. Captain Stockton wanted to fire off the Peacemaker, a cannon that could fire a 225-pound projectile up to 5 miles. The Peacemaker had only been tested a handful of times before the overzealous captain rushed the guns mounting on the ship, which was far less than usual for such a weapon at the time. As the USS Princeton made its way down from Alexandria, Captain Stockton personally loaded, charged, and pulled back the Peacemaker's hammer. Guests watched in amazement as the cannon was fired 2 times. Thomas Gilmer was particularly enthralled with his Navy's weapon and asked for one more fire. He wanted a good one. Not a single person objected to that, certainly not Captain Stockton. Upon this third deafening bang of the Peacemaker, however, something went terribly wrong. A dense cloud of black smoke enveloped the spectators, and the entire ship shook violently. The Peacemaker had exploded. Luckily, by this third attempted shot, the crowd had thinned out. Most of the USS Princeton's guests had wandered away from the cannon, drawn to a man singing and the steadily flowing wine. But when the smoke cleared, there was plenty of carnage. Dozens of people were severely wounded, some mortally. 10 men died as a result of the explosion, including 5 sailors whose actual names rarely made it in print at the time this story was developing. The others were dignitaries and military men, and included the man who'd wished for the final shot, Thomas Walker Gilmer, and fellow longtime politician Abel Parker Upshur. 2 years later, and more than 1,200 miles away, in East Texas, the state legislature successfully organized a part of Nacogdoches County into a separate county and called it Upshur, named after the Secretary of State who died in the tragic accident on the USS Princeton. The county seat of Upshur was named after the Secretary of the Navy, who also died in the explosion, and would be called Gilmer. Neither of these men were Texans, but Virginia man Abel Upshur had worked diligently to annex Texas to the United States, which, besides his terrible death, presumably also played a role in the decision to name the county after him. Gilmer, Texas, located about 120 miles east of Dallas and 85 miles west of Shreveport, Louisiana, was not a ready-made town, and its progression into one was slow-going. The Upshur County judge, in fact, heard cases under an oak tree about a mile north of town for nearly 5 years until a small cabin was finally built to hold court. In one proceeding there, a man brought before the judge for public drunkenness began trotting around the outdoor makeshift court, proclaiming to be a horse.
"Mr. Sheriff," the judge demanded, "tie that horse."
He dismissed the case shortly thereafter. That amusing story, apparently, was told with a smirk, often used by residents to describe just how little was going on there. But humorous, self-deprecating Gilmer anecdotes notwithstanding, the town eventually came into its own. For years, cotton farming dominated the town's economy, and Gilmer produced a lot considering its small population. Sweet potatoes, or yams if you like, were also a big cash crop in the area. Since Gilmer was a point of trade, saloons and churches came, as did cotton production plants like spinning and hat factories. In 1931, when the Mudge Oil Company set up shop, however, Gilmer's economy and population changed virtually overnight as folks came to Upshur County to stake their own black gold claims. Still, the growth was only modest. The population had only reached around 4,000 by the time 1950 rolled around. But Gilmer belongs right beside a good number of other places in Texas that can undeniably be considered quintessential small towns, at least aesthetically. The early mid-century architecture and red brick roads that surround the Upshur County Courthouse and make up the town square are picturesque. The site taken in its entirety resembles nearly every archetype of a perfect small town you'd see on television or in film. Gilmer, Texas was thought to be safe, wholesome. Sure, major crimes happened there, they happen everywhere, but they didn't happen in Gilmer to the extent they do in Dallas, or even the little city of Longview, just a little to the southeast. By the early 1990s, the population of Gilmer was just shy of 5,000 residents. It didn't seem much different there than in the 1950s or 60s, not just because the virtually stagnant growth in residents since then, but also because Gilmer still maintained its quintessential small-town charm, slow pace, and outward appearance of innocence. In the year 1992, however, the town turned upside down when teenager Kelly Day Wilson disappeared, and Gilmer, Texas became infected with a hysterical disease that had been sweeping the nation, perhaps the world, for many years before. Kelly Day Wilson was born on May 18, 1974, to parents Robbie and Kathy in Natchitoches, Louisiana. When she was 10 years old, Kelly's parents divorced. Her father, Robbie, remarried a woman named Waverlin, and her mother remarried a man named Robert Carlson, becoming Kathy Carlson. Most of the time after the divorce, Kelly lived with her father in Louisiana, where she attended Natchitoches Central High School. But she was close to both parents and often conflicted about having to make that choice. Kelly was your average teenager. She was outgoing and friendly. She participated in track, had lots of friends, and she loved to read and dance. At Natchitoches Central High in Louisiana, Kelly was involved with the FFA, or Future Farmers of America. The first semester of her senior year, Kelly was living in Gilmer, Texas, with her mother. At Gilmer High School, she joined the dance squad. In October 1991, Kelly danced in the Yamboree Festival, a four-day county fair held the third weekend of that month, celebrating Gilmer's once major cash crop, the yam. The event has been held in Gilmer since 1935 and includes tons of activities, including a sweet potato pie competition, a livestock show, an art show, and a fiddler's contest. The festival draws thousands of tourists to the area every year, so in a way, sweet potatoes remain a cash crop in Gilmer and Upshur County. Like at Natchitoches Central High back in Louisiana, Kelly had lots of friends at Gilmer High, and certainly no enemies. The 17-year-old high school senior got along with just about everyone. Kelly was looking forward to going away to college, looking forward to independence. Again, she was your average teenager. The most hell she ever raised was bringing home stray dogs or toilet papering neighborhood houses with friends. The cops got her one time for that one and called her folks to come get her at 2 a.m. They weren't thrilled with her about it at the time, but later they would look back at the incident with fondness. Kelly Day Wilson spent her 1991 Christmas break with her father and stepmother in New Orleans. Wanting what she thought was the real New Orleans experience, Kelly demanded her father take her to a bar. They ended up at a place called Pat O'Brien's, where Kelly thought she was hot stuff when she was served up a margarita. Little did the teenager know, her dad had given a wink and a smile when she'd made the order. The bartender knew what he meant. Kelly was served a boozeless cocktail. After the holiday and just before the new year, her stepmother, Waverlin, brought Kelly back to her mother's home in Texas. The 17-year-old senior couldn't figure out whether she wanted to finish her last semester of high school in Gilmer or back in Louisiana. Her stepmother told her she'd come back on January the 10th, 1992, and bring her back to Natchitoches if that's what she wanted. Ultimately, though, Kelly decided she'd stay in Gilmer, Texas, to finish out the year. Besides school, after all, she had a steady job at Northeast Texas Video there, which was a popular VHS video rental store right in the town square, or courthouse square, on the north side. Even if she'd opted to go back to Louisiana to finish out high school, however, by the time January 10th rolled around, the date her stepmother offered to come back for her, Kelly Day Wilson had been missing for 5 days.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
At about 8:30 p.m. on Sunday, January 5th, 1992, Kelly Day Wilson and her manager at Northeast Texas Video, Joe Henry, chatted as they closed up the shop. Henry asked Kelly if she was opening up the next day. The VHS rental store opened at noon, and she told him she was. Henry told Kelly he'd see her tomorrow. He hopped in his pickup truck and drove off, and she in her 1985 gold Dodge Charger. Kelly was supposed to meet up with friends but had to drop off the day's deposit first at Gilmer National Bank, which was less than a block north from Northeast Texas Video, quite literally less than a one-minute drive. However, she never made it to her friend's house. Instead, 17-year-old Kelly Day Wilson vanished. Kelly's mother Kathy and stepfather Robert became worried when she failed to return home on the night of January 5th. Robert hopped in his car to look for Kelly, and Kathy began phoning her friends. At about 5 a.m. on Monday, January 6th, 1992, Kelly's stepfather found her vehicle parked in one of the spots that run along the east side of Northeast Texas Video. The 1985 gold Dodge Charger was unlocked, and Kelly's belongings, including her purse, were inside. The keys to the vehicle, however, were nowhere to be found. The rear passenger side tire was flat. At approximately 6 a.m., Kathy phoned her daughter's boss, Joe Henry. She asked Henry if Kelly had mentioned going somewhere after work, and he told the worried mother that she'd said something about hanging out with a friend. But Kathy already knew that. She called the Gilmer police and reported Kelly missing at 7:05 a.m. Joe Henry, he later said, figured Kelly had just stayed out all night, and he didn't think much more about it until she didn't show up for work at 12 p.m. It was then, the man said, he became concerned, and he was the last known person to see Kelly Day Wilson alive. Gilmer Police Sergeant James York Brown took charge of the missing teenager's case. He noticed several important details at the scene of Kelly's car. It was obvious, Sergeant Brown pointed out, that the vehicle had been driven since the tire went flat, as it was completely off the wheel. Kelly probably drove the short distance to drop off the bank deposit, Sergeant Brown ascertained, and upon realizing the severity of the flat tire, parked back at the video store and looked for assistance. There weren't any signs of a struggle, no immediate reason to suspect foul play, although Sergeant Brown made clear they hadn't ruled it out. As with most missing adolescents, no matter how much the parents protest, the police were first interested in pursuing a runaway theory. Kelly's manager at the VHS rental, Joe Henry, told police she often spoke of being conflicted, torn between the decision to live with her mother or her father. Rightfully so, this dynamic piqued Sergeant Brown's curiosity, but to his credit, the policeman listened when Kelly Day Wilson's family spoke. Robbie Wilson traveled to Gilmer, Texas from Natchitoches, Louisiana, immediately upon hearing of his daughter's disappearance. He told the small town's newspaper, the Gilmer Mirror, that he hoped she'd just done something foolish and run off. But there were problems with that hope. She'd never ran away before, and in fact, to just up and vanish, the father said, was contrary to her personality. Though Kelly had taken her parents' divorce hard and showed obvious signs of stress as the result, Robbie said, she'd slowly come to terms with it in the years since. She certainly never exhibited any signs whatsoever of running away. Robbie Wilson couldn't help but imagine that something terrible had happened to his daughter. Sergeant James York Brown took heed to Kelly's father's words and welcomed his help in the investigation. On the morning of January 7, 1992, Sergeant Brown contacted the Gilmer Mirror and other media outlets in the surrounding areas and asked for their assistance in getting the word out. Kelly's photograph was printed in newspapers and shown on television, accompanied by a description of her, the clothing she was last seen in, and other identifying details. She was a 17-year-old white female, the descriptions read, with shoulder-length bleached blonde hair that had natural brown roots showing, since her hair had grown out some since she last bleached it. Kelly has blue eyes. She stood 5 feet 7 inches tall and weighed approximately 120 pounds at the time of her disappearance and wore a wire retainer on her lower teeth and soft contact lenses. Kelly was wearing what was described as a dark purple boys type rugby shirt with a white collar and cuffs and a red, gold, and white insignia. She had on brown suede loafers and cut-off, knee-length, stonewashed blue jean shorts, frayed at the leg openings. Her jewelry included a gold watch, a gold bracelet, triangular earrings, a gold and emerald ring, a gold and diamond ring set with a Mexican coin that had an image of an eagle, and a gold-domed ring. Since he was sure Kelly had driven on her car's flat tire to make the bank deposit, Sergeant Brown's first order of business was to get the Gilmer National Bank surveillance footage. Kelly Day Wilson was indeed captured on the bank's camera, or at least her car was. At 8:31 p.m., Kelly's car pulled up to the night deposit box, and the driver dropped the Northeast Texas video deposit bag for the business day of Sunday, January 5, 1992, into the slot. The driver can be presumed to be Kelly Wilson, of course. It only makes sense. She and her manager, Joe Henry, left at approximately 8:30 p.m., and the bank was less than 1 minute away from the VHS rental store. So the timing fits. However, the surveillance video is said to have been of too poor quality to make a positive identification. Sergeant Brown also said that it appeared there was a second individual in the front passenger seat, but again, the footage was too grainy to be sure. Even though the surveillance footage couldn't definitively determine if the driver was indeed Kelly, it did clear up one important detail. A robbery abduction was out of the picture. An abduction with a different motive, though, was still very much a possibility. As the investigation got underway, one major mistake tainted the case from the get-go. Kelly Day Wilson's 1985 Gold Dodge Charger was never dusted for fingerprints. Since the Gilmer PD were initially working under the assumption that Kelly ran off, her father, Robbie Wilson, had scoured the vehicle for clues after the car was released to the family. The crime scene, if the car was a crime scene, was compromised. This misstep has haunted the force since, and Gilmer Police Chief Al McAllister later commented, with shame in his voice,
"If I'd have known what I know now, the car would have been impounded."
Sergeant James York Brown continued his efforts to gather information by pleading for the public's help through the local newspaper and other media outlets. Joe Henry, Kelly Wilson's manager at the VHS rental, too, was shown Gilmer High School annuals and police photos of area criminals to see if he recognized anyone having visited the store. It's unclear if that tactic led to anything, but presumably not. More than a month after Kelly Day Wilson vanished, police were no closer to finding out what happened to her than they were the day the 17-year-old was reported missing by her mother and stepfather. On Monday, February 10, 1992, hundreds of volunteers gathered to search for clues alongside the Gilmer Police Department and the Upshur County Sheriff's Office. County constables and state troopers, too, aided the more than 200 volunteers, who all turned out simply because Kelly's parents, Robbie Wilson and Kathy Carlson, asked. Upshur County Sheriff Buck Cross and his men had already been helping in the efforts to locate Kelly, grimly searching county dump sites and abandoned wells, and he said they'd continue to help whenever they were needed. Beginning at 1 p.m. that day, the lawmen and volunteer citizens formed in lines side by side and pushed through the dense brush and heavily wooded areas outside Gilmer, an area surrounding Cherokee Trace, a clearing through the pines thought to be made by the Cherokee people sometime around 1821. Sheriff Cross commented that he wasn't sure why that particular area was the focus of the search efforts, but said unconvincingly that he speculated Kelly's parents simply felt it should be looked at. This search, however, turned up nothing. 4 days after this search, another lead authorities had been pursuing became known. One that came after the airing of a syndicated television series in early February highlighted an abduction out of Clinton, Missouri, 500 miles north of the little town of Gilmer, Texas.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You might recognize the name Angela Hammond. Recently, on the 30th anniversary of her disappearance, on April 4th, 2021, police in Clinton, Missouri, released new details about the case to the public in hopes of garnering new information. Here are the details of Angela's case, as well as how the case became associated with the disappearance of Kelly Day Wilson. At around 10 p.m. on Thursday, April 4th, 1991, 20-year-old Angela Hammond, who was 4 months pregnant at the time, dropped off her boyfriend at home. The couple had spent the evening at a cookout in Clinton, Missouri. Angela stopped by a friend's house to chat for a while, and after she left to go home, she stopped by a payphone to call her boyfriend. As they spoke, Angela mentioned a green Ford pickup truck that was circling the block. This vehicle was distinct in at least one way. On the back window was a decal of a fish jumping out of water. When the truck came to a stop not far from her, the driver, a man, exited the vehicle and began shining a flashlight on the ground as if he were looking for something. Angela figured he needed to use the payphone, but when she asked him, the man told her he'd come back. But just after that, Angela's boyfriend heard a scream, Angela's scream, and the call went silent. Her boyfriend, who lived close by, quickly jumped in his car and sped toward the payphone. On his way there, he passed the green Ford pickup truck, and as he did, Angela's boyfriend said, he heard his name yelled out. He threw his car into reverse to turn around and pursue the truck, which is what he did for about 2 miles before the vehicle's transmission failed, presumably due to the quick shift into reverse before. The truck got away, and when Angela's boyfriend told the cops about the whole ordeal, they were less than convinced. The story seemed far-fetched, something out of a movie. The Clinton police focused the initial investigation on Angela's boyfriend until he readily agreed to a polygraph and passed with flying colors, and until two unrelated witnesses came forward reporting to have seen this green Ford pickup truck with the fish decal on the rear window as having been around the area of the payphone Angela was using. The sightings of the vehicle were the same night and at around the same time Angela would have been speaking with her boyfriend at around 11:30 to 11:45 p.m. on April 4th. The witnesses remembered, they told police, because this truck was distinct and its movements suspicious. The driver, the witnesses relayed, was a white male, approximately 35 to 40 years old, with glasses and a beard. The dark green Ford truck was described as a late 1960s model. Now, like I said above, the Clinton, Missouri police recently released new details in the form of a letter sent to a drug informant who was testifying for the state in a major narcotics court case at the time. This informant's name came out during the proceedings, and the letter didn't mince words, really. It was a threat against the man and his family. The text was made up of cut and pasted letters out of a magazine or newspaper, one line reading,
"We know where your foxy daughter is."
This man's daughter was named Angela, though she was not the Angela that had been presumably abducted in Clinton. The letter, too, was postmarked the same day Angela Hammond went missing. It went on to mention by name the informant's estranged wife, the author of the letter offering their deepest sympathies for her loss, presumably meaning the loss of her and the informant's daughter. These details, along with others they have not released, led the Clinton police to theorize that Angela Hammond was abducted and most likely murdered as the result of mistaken identity. That department had also followed many other leads over the years, including half-brothers Jesse Rush and Marvin Chaney, who were arrested and convicted for the January 19, 1991 abduction, rape, and murder of 42-year-old Trudy Darby in Max Creek, Missouri. These two brothers were also suspected of many other crimes, including the February 27, 1991 disappearance of Cheryl Kinney in Nevada, Missouri, and the March 11, 1987 Crystal City, Missouri disappearance of Diana Brongardt. Serial killer Kenneth Allen McDuff was also theorized as the man who abducted Angela Hammond in Clinton, Missouri, but there was never any evidence that concretely connected him. There's much more to Angela's disappearance than what we've gone over here, but here's how the case became connected to Kelly Day Wilson's disappearance 500 miles south in Gilmer, Texas. On Wednesday, February 5th, 1992, the television show Unsolved Mysteries featured a segment on Angela Hammond's disappearance from Clinton, Missouri. Within days of the program's airing, two Gilmer, Texas residents called authorities. First, a woman called the Upshur County Sheriff's Department and reported to have seen a green Ford pickup truck with a decal depicting a fish jumping out of water at a grocery store off Texas State Highway 271. Sheriff Buck Cross said this woman saw the truck a few days before the Unsolved Mysteries segment aired and called his department after the program provided the description of the vehicle. A man also reported to Gilmer police that he'd seen such a truck on Farm to Market Road 49 about 2 or 3 weeks before Angela Hammond's story aired. Both Sheriff Cross and Gilmer Police Sergeant James York Brown said they considered the sightings to be legitimate and were eager to locate this vehicle and its owner. There was no evidence or witnesses that connected the green Ford pickup truck to Kelly Day Wilson's disappearance, both lawmen pointed out, but they were probing every possibility. Just as quickly as these sightings came, however, the leads were apparently dropped, as the green truck was never mentioned again concerning Kelly's case. It had been over a month since Kelly Day Wilson went missing. Kelly's parents were in anguish, and the investigation into her disappearance was dragging. Even with the help of the FBI, the Gilmer Police, and the Upshur County Sheriff's Department struggled to turn over any clues or evidence. Gilmer Police Sergeant James York Brown commented that the investigation still hadn't produced one shred of evidence to suggest foul play, besides the length of time Kelly had been gone. But at this point, he was holding back one little detail that might suggest foul play concerning the flat tire on Kelly's 1985 Dodge Charger, and we will too for now. Sergeant Brown insisted that the investigation was still as active as it was on day one. There were still plenty of possibilities to check out, he said, and more interviews to be conducted. The fact is, Brown was conducting the investigation as if Kelly's disappearance was the result of foul play. Meanwhile, Kelly Day Wilson's parents and step-parents continued distributing flyers bearing their daughter's photo and description. Robbie Wilson and Kelly's stepmother, Waverlin, were frustrated with the lack of progress, but they didn't blame Sergeant Brown's investigation. To the contrary, they were impressed with his relentless running down of every single lead, no matter how small or unlikely. Sergeant Brown himself put out ads in the local paper asking for information on Kelly's disappearance. He raised money to rent out a billboard on the highway with the missing 17-year-old's picture and description, asking for tips. Robbie Wilson told the press,
"We'd be bushed and tell James maybe it was time to put the case aside for a while, to get some rest and a fresh perspective. But he wouldn't. He looked for Kelly on his vacation time."
Kelly's family, too, showed no signs of letting up in their efforts. And like Robbie Wilson said, when they got tired, it was Sergeant Brown who continued to push. The father joined the policeman often in searches of wooded areas and fields where someone might hide a body. Kathy Carlson, Kelly's mother, was less impressed with the efforts of Sergeant Brown and the Gilmer police. Later, the case became embroiled in a mass hysteria that was sweeping the nation at the time. It was at its peak, in fact, and Sergeant Brown's diligence would be used against him. But even before that, Kelly's case seemed doomed to go cold. Still, everyone in the family was working to find their missing loved one. They mailed off more flyers than they could count to outside law enforcement jurisdictions and were offering a $5,000 reward for information leading to Kelly's safe return. The efforts of Kelly's family and Gilmer Police Sergeant Brown soon led to rumors that she was being stalked, which led to the case's first person of interest. It was the beginning of a long series of events concerning Kelly Day Wilson's disappearance that likely only helped the person who was actually responsible evade justice. Coming up on Gone Cold, red herrings, wrong turns, screw-ups, stolen police files, and satanic panic. If you have any information about the disappearance of Kelly Day Wilson, please call the Gilmer, Texas Police at 903-843-5545. Erica and I will be in Austin June 4th through 6th, representing Gone Cold at this year's Crime Con. We'd love to meet y'all, so if you plan on attending, please be sure to stop by our table on Podcast Row and say hi and grab a few giveaways. If you're planning on buying a ticket, you can use the promo code COLD for 10% off the admission price. Hope to see y'all there. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and for just $2.50, you'll have access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them, such as the Desert Killer and the Odessa Lust murders, among others. Thanks so much to everyone who supports us there. We could not do this without you, and we appreciate it beyond words. If you'd like to help find answers for the families of unsolved crime victims from all over, or help identify a Jane or John Doe, please visit DNASolves.com, where you can submit your DNA data from a consumer testing company like Ancestry or 23andMe to their database. We'll provide a link in the show notes. The History of Gilmer by Hetty Calloway, 1926. A Brief History of Upshur County by G.H. Baird, 2017. The Richmond Inquirer, The Baltimore Sun, The Gilmer Mirror, The Dallas Morning News, KETK.com, The Chicago Tribune, The Tyler Courier Times, The Longview News Journal, and Medium.com were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.